What up, fuckers? It's Christina Hutchinson.
And Corinne Fisher. You are about to listen to a clip from Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut-shaming podcast. This week, we have on guest stand-up comedian Amy Cardinelli, and we talk a lot about mental health, and we also laugh a lot. This is when you definitely want to check out the full episode for. And to do that, you can subscribe to the Luminary channel on Apple Podcasts by going to apple.co/GWF. Again, that's apple.co/GWF.
I wanted to start with just Amy, you talking a little bit about, yeah, about your mental illness and how you kind of got diagnosed and that. Just like start us a little bit at the beginning of when you started looking into this or maybe thinking something wasn't, quote, right. I don't know. It's we have to be so gentle with terminology.
You're not defected, Amy.
When you found out you're a whole person.
I'm Italian. I'm already defected in my own way. I'm an Italian Jew. I mean, I didn't start off
me?
At the top.
Oh, you're an Italian Jew. I'm an Italian Jew.
That's why we get along.
I didn't know you were both as
y'all
well.
Y'all is the same ingredients.
Wow, this is exciting. Very few pizza bagels.
Oh, yeah.
We make up for pizza bagel.
I would say it's like weird. I got misdiagnosed a bunch. So I was on like anxiety meds when I was like in elementary school. And then I was like an Adderall kid.
Uh-huh. Elementary school anxiety
yeah,
meds.
Yeah, I know. Well, like, what was I worried about in the sandbox?
But also, if a kid is worried about something, maybe don't give her a pill and figure out what she's worried about.
I think it was the 90s. I think everyone was big. I think it was the Adderall Nation. Like, I remember sixth grade was when XR came out, which was like, I didn't have to go to the nurse's office in the middle of the day anymore to get.
Wow.
Yeah, it was totally fun. And then I got diagnosed as bipolar when I was like 17, 18 and was on heavy drugs. Like, I switched over from my child psychiatrist to this crazy rich South African man in Great Neck, which is already a horrible descriptor.
Right. And it's just like, how many milligrams you want, honey?
I was like, do you work for lithium? And he would be like, take it. So I went through a horrible relationship when I was 21 and just, I couldn't snap out of it.
Like a romantic relationship or a relationship with lithium?
Yeah, I was just letting, because when you feel bad, you let bad in. And I
ain't
really,
that the truth?
I really,
amen.
Yeah, I really feel that. So I think like most recently, just to fast forward on this fun journey, 2020 shit show for basically everybody. Huh. But I went in like a fugue state, which just means I have no memory. I'd say from like April until July
of 2020.
I stopped answering calls from my therapist.
Did you feel like you were in a dream state?
A dream is pleasant.
Like it wasn't reality, but meaning like,
oh yeah.
You know, I've walked around and I'm like, I feel like this isn't here. What the fuck? It's like, it's weird. It sounds like it's like a comatose.
I was in a serious relationship in 2019 summer, and then quarantine happened and I sunk that ship. Like, we moved in together about a month before quarantine. I would wake up crying because I was not well. And we wouldn't talk about it. It's like we were Mormons. We'd go on vacation. Shit. We would never talk about like the fact that I was breaking down.
What did he do while you were crying?
He would just go, well, I don't know what to do for you anymore. I don't know what to do. And it was just like, it was just really heartbreaking because I was just like, you don't love me enough to help me.
Huh.
So it was like, he just didn't know what to do anymore. And he let me like light it on fire. So the week we went into quarantine, I moved in with, you know, and then we don't really talk anymore. But
Romantic or non-romantic?
No, friend.
Okay.
And then basically he just took the out, because when I was having an episode, I said, I can't do this. And he grabbed that out and was like, thank God. And kind of nursed me, like we were hooking up back and forth. And then I lost it. In June, I was like suicidal. I was like really unwell. And he dropped me off at my apartment with my things. And was like, well, your life will be fine. You'll be okay. And I literally like could not pick myself up. Like it was so bad. And I was like in bed all the time. And I was just like really, really fucked up. And then I said, I need to go into treatment. Like maybe I need inpatient. Maybe I need to go to the hospital, whatever. But I ended up going to like almost inpatient. But I remember the realest moment in my life, which is like crazy, is I called him. And I had a comic friend who was like, you have no, like, there's no more bullets in the chamber. Like, you just got to go for it and have this conversation because there's nothing left to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I had this conversation. I said, I have borderline. I got diagnosed. I'm going into inpatient. Can you be by my side? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I can't. He's like, I don't want to be. And okay. I remember that being like, he'll be like, I'll be your
friend.
That's
your biggest fear come true.
It was for when I say like
abandonment, right?
When I got off that phone, it's like, I the worst like symptoms of borderline came out.
Right.
Where it was like, I was taking it out of myself and I was just horrible. And he's like, you sounded so insane on the phone. And I was like, you have like no affect. It was like, he's just like, well, you know, things happen, Aim, like that's life. And then I just went into treatment alone. Yeah. But I went under this guise that like, I went into crazy treatment, like this, like crazy, where it's like, you know, when you're in these groups with, therapy. I don't say unwell people, but people that can't hold jobs,
mm-hmm. right?
That have your diagnosis, that you're sitting and at first going to treatment, I just wanted to shake them and be like, hey, you're mourning a relationship from 10 years ago. They're married. It's right. time to go.
Yeah.
And I remember having to learn, like, you can't tell people things. You just mm-hmm. have to connect. Even if it's at your worst point, you have to be like, I was her at one point. She's being ineffective. I have to just sit.
Oof.
And that is like,
Woo-y.
You got to get off your high horse.
You got to shut the fuck up. It's hard. Yeah. To give somebody space.
Because the Jew and Italian in me wanted to shake them and be like, honey, it's over. And I had to be like... and then I had a joke and I'd be like, oh, I'm like on the same train as you diagnostically. Right, but, I have nothing. Right. I can't. At this point, I was so low.
But were you saying, yeah. when you were saying, honey, it's over, like in, even if it was in your head, were you also, was there a part of you that was saying that to yourself too about that guy?
I think I was still in like that fugue state where I was just, but it's also like, I think in life you learn that a lot of the behaviors that bother you are things you see in yourself.
Right. That's why I asked that.
So
yeah,
like
yeah.
loud people don't like loud people.
Right.
Quiet people don't like quiet people.
Yeah.
Personally. So, nothing. I went into inpatient to get this guy back.
Wow.
I was under this delusion. I'm going to like 8 hours a day to therapy and I'm under this like psychosis where all my, I lost weight. All my friends were like,
well, because for borderline, if you could, because talk us through, because I've done a lot of research on borderline yeah. specifically because I had people in my life with it.
And I have too. I just completed my Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the series.
Amazing.
And that's
amazing.
That's what the main character has
I never
in it.
Knew that.
Yep. I highly recommend it.
It's, but it's, you know, fear of abandonment is at the core. Right?
I was in denial. So it was like crazy because I went into treatment for it in 2018 and I was like, I don't have it. I went into DBT. So dialectical behavioral therapy was developed by this crazy smart woman named Marsha Linehan. And she came out as having DBT like 30 years after she came out with this treatment.
Mm.
And she was institutionalized for 6 years when she was 18.
Oof.
And this is back in the day when they would like waterboard people. Like
yeah.
she was just like burning herself. She was like very messed up. And she made this like religious vow to help people that went through what she went through.
Uh-huh.
But what I found so insane was that she came out much later in life at a huge conference at the same mental institution that she was at.
Wow.
That
yeah.
was reconverted. It was like, I have this disorder. That's right. why I'm so good at it.
Right.
But hey, guess what?
Yeah.
I
talk your talk because I've been in your shoes.
But I guess long story short, I was in denial and my ex was like, you have it. And I would snap. I would borderline snap where it's you have this anger because yes. you can't regulate yourself. So I would become like Cruella. Or like like
yeah.
a chihuahua. And
it's hard. It's an outsider. It's so hard not to take that personally, but once you get it, you're like, oh, you're going through hell in there.
Yeah. And I think like I'd say like their cycle, the main cycle with borderline is like, now I don't qualify, thank God, because I put like the work in. A lot of people don't know that as you mature, the impulsivity dies down because as we get older, we get
and
you
you're
know.
Proactive about changing it.
I had to go through so many thousands of dollars of treatment, like it's astronomical. Like I would log on to Zoom for 8 months for 3 hours, 5 days a week
wow.
to go to treatment.
Wow.
And be
3 hours
groups.
In a row.
It was
so group therapy, combination of group therapy and other or is it all group therapy?
It's all group therapy for DBT because like research has proven that people with borderline like do best in group because there's that interpersonal.
Well, and you could hear somebody else and you could recognize it in them. If you can't recognize it in yourself, you will be able to recognize it in the other
yeah,
person.
Yeah, and it's also like a main hallmark of the disorder is like shame. So like people don't know there's a difference between guilt and shame. So guilt is like, okay, you stole from
you
Target.
You did something
you
wrong.
You stole from
yeah.
Target, which we've all done. And you steal from Target and that's societally bad. You're not a bad person.
Right.
You just did a shitty thing.
Stealing's illegal, yeah.
Shame is when you take it out on yourself. When you're like, I stole from Target, I am forever a bad person.
Yeah.
BPD, shame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, because I did a lot of research on like guilt and shame when we were writing our book years ago.
Yeah.
And I think also like guilt, like there's like a reason to feel it. And shame is like, it's like kind of like you made up the reason in your head.
Well, also
a little bit more.
So when you snap, like people in your life have screamed at you.
Yeah.
They immediately feel shame. Like I would describe borderline as like you're watching a movie and you're the director, but you can't yell cut.
Mm-hmm.
So you're watching your life light on fire. And what do? You get angry because you can't press the pause button. Who do you take it out on? The people closest to you.
Right.
What do? Then you take it out on yourself.
Yeah.
And then it's shame. So that's why people, a lot of people have addiction issues, eating disorders.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah.
you're like hell yeah, let's go for it.
So, but it's great that it can be something that can be altered and made go away. I mean,
yeah, I didn't know you could not diagnose as something anymore. Like once you are diagnosed with it, you don't necessarily always have it.
So there's criteria. I mean, the therapy is so, like, it's called skills. So you learn skills. There's four modules and you learn skills and you have homework. So I would have homework every day for therapy. They would go, okay, you're going to use the FAST skill, which is about keeping your respect in a social situation. So it's like fair, apologize, interpersonal respect. I can't remember. And it's like, how do you say to someone, I can't hang out because I have this to do, but I still love you.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn skills like you're a baby.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's basic communication. Obviously, if you knew that, you wouldn't be yelling.
I know you wouldn't be in that group. But
right.
yeah, so essentially I think there's 9 qualifiers, which was what I was told when I was diagnosed.
Okay.
And you have to meet 5.
Okay.
I met 11. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you get to a point where it's like you're able to regulate yourself, whether you're not participating and taking it out on yourself or you're not being impulsive.
Okay.
And you're just able to function. Yeah. I think, if that answers the question.
Yeah.
But you can go back. So it's spurred by breakups or deaths. And that's when you get into that zone of just being completely ineffective, I think.
So I have
a fear of going back there.
Right, right.
Essentially. That's why I keep men at a distance, because I'm like, you have the
power. You can't hurt me if I don't let you in.
To put me back in treatment. So I have this very weird...
Oh yeah, that's logical. But you know, it's like, you know, when you quit smoking, for example, it's you know, you really could tell if you actually quit when something stressful happens and you don't smoke. Like that's the, like these testing moments are the. But also too, with borderline, it's very rare to get treatment, like to get treatment like that, right?
Yeah, I'm running support groups with this. There's a organization that was founded by people that are family members of people with borderline. And basically, it's this free service that runs online support groups for people throughout the country. And I'm training right now. So I was accepted. You need like 2 letters of reference where people lie about how great you are.
Nice.
And they're like, she's so stable. And then you basically engage. And it's people. What it's so interesting. There's such a disparity because there's people from rural areas. Say they're from like Iowa. And there's two things. A lot of these people are in disability. They don't have access to these specialized treatment because DBT is
expensive,
money. And that's why I'm trying to give out Instagram stories with secrets of things I've learned, because it's like, I know not everybody A has health insurance and not everyone B has the cash for out of network.
Yeah.
So essentially these people are with these crazy accents in Georgia and they're like, nobody knows what BPD is here. And I'm not doing
they just
well.
Say I'm being
you're
a
like,
dick.
Oh, you're no. like, but it's very sad because you're just sitting there and you're like so privileged, because basically the creator of DBT said in a video, do not tell doctors you have BPD. They will treat you differently.
Huh.
So I can't imagine being in like Georgia and they're like, personality? Oh no. You know what I mean?
It's
like, because the name was developed off of, it was developed in like 1930, late 1930s. And it's basically, they're trying to change it to pervasive emotional instability disorder, but it basically means the borderline of neuroses and psychosis.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, like the name, it just lends itself to like, this one's borderline crazy.
I know, should I put it on my Hinge? Should I just drop it? I give great blowjobs, but
I might yell at you occasionally.
Oh my God. Why is the treatment specifically so expensive?
Because I think it's very specialized. Like you have to go to a lot of courses to be trained in skills. And I think it's such a sensitive population that you need to know what you're giving out, because the suicide rate is crazy high.
Mm.
So if you say the wrong thing and someone gets off the phone, it's like, whoops.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
High stress situation.
Yeah. And I'm lucky because I'm always been highly functional where I'm like, I have that anal retentive part of me where it's like, I will stay at work even though I am like very unwell and you'll never know. And then I get home at 3 and I'm like, time to cry. Yeah. But it's, so I look at these people that can't hold a job.
Right.
And I'm like, whoa, Nelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think if I didn't have off from work when I lost my shit last summer, I would have been fired.
Right, right, right.
There's no way. There's no
way. Yeah, I mean, because the person that I knew with it was very close to me for most of my life, and then we stopped. We don't talk anymore.
I can't imagine the things you went through.
I actually saw her yesterday for the first time in over a year, and it was so lovely to see her, but you know, so much time had passed. I read a bunch of books. Walking on Eggshells was one of the books that I read.
Perfect name.
And right. A lot of books about borderline, because I also identified some similarities between that and this person and my mother. And it's, you know, one of I had two takeaways with that. But one, I'm like, I'm curious to get your opinion on. One was that, oh, there's more suffering going on in here. It's not, you know, they're not doing this to piss me off. Like, I was a people pleaser. So if you're yelling at me, but I'm being a good friend, I will internalize that instead of going, you're scared right now. Mm-hmm. And you're yelling at me when I'm not the problem. So I'm going to give you some space. Like, that's a secure way to handle that. I was like, why would you be mean to me? I'm being such a good friend. It was such an explosive friendship. It was terrible.
Yeah. I feel like it's like when someone's really bad borderline, it's like they're speaking Mandarin and you're speaking English. And you're like, really, you're yelling careful. In another dialect. I have no clue. Right. Can we get a translator? Like, you're like, the fuck.
But lot of the advice given in Walking on Eggshells is like, you need to make the borderline feel secure and you need to make them feel like it's not them, even if they're yelling at you. You need, and I'm like, I need to.
Just like act like you're talking to a man.
Yeah, this is.
That's exactly the adjustments I make to talk to insecure men. That's the same thing.
You're like, I eliminate big words.
Cody Fisher's guide to talking to men.
I really do.
That concludes our clip with our interview from stand-up comedian Amy Cardinelli. If you want to listen to the entire thing, head on over to apple.co/GWF. That's apple.co/GWF. Subscribe to the Luminary channel on Apple Podcasts.